So every now and then, when I think about Hoboken Grace, I still have to pinch myself because I still remember the first time I came to Hoboken Grace, and it was a Sunday morning, and I was strolling through Hoboken. I didn't have a plan in mind, but I saw the sign to Hoboken Grace, and I decided to go in and sort of take a peek, not really knowing what to expect. I grew up as a Christian and I knew all about God my entire life, but I was so far removed from anything that had anything to do with God. So I decided to peek, and I had barely peeked my head in, and Maria was greeting me warmly with a smile from ear to ear. I don't know if you know who's met Maria, but she's just wonderful, wonderful greeter, very friendly. As she led me to my seat, I was too embarrassed to confess that really I was just curious to see what the church was like and that I did not plan on staying. So I sat towards the back because I figured, you know, when the right time comes, I would sneak off and no one would even notice that I was gone. So, like I said, you know, I grew up as a Christian, but somewhere over the course of many, many years, 20-something years, God became irrelevant in my life. I was certainly not happy with the person I had become over the course of these years. Definitely not who I had intended to be when I was much younger. But the day I came into Hoboken Grace, I was in a very broken state. I was experiencing grief and really desperation that comes with the loss of somebody that you are very close to. So I'd lost my best friend recently. In fact, the night before I came to Hoboken that Saturday, in the midst of tears, it was probably one of the first times in years that I had stopped, paused, and I had asked God to rescue me from everything that I was feeling. So, I mean, there I was sitting down in the back of the church, and I figured 5 to 10 minutes, you know, and I'm out of here. So, but just as I sat down, Chris began to speak, and you know, he went through his usual greeting. My name is Chris. Hi, I'm the pastor here at Hoboken Grace. You know, a greeting that is now way familiar to me. But then he proceeded to say that it doesn't matter where you are in your life right now, we welcome you into Hoboken Grace. And I was really taken back by those first words. It doesn't really matter where you are in your life. A part of me felt like, okay, really? Really? I mean, you're just saying that because you want people to be here, you want people to feel comfortable here. And I kept saying to myself, you know, I wonder if it would matter if this guy found out how I truly am and what I've truly been up to over the last 20 years. And I wonder if it would matter if this guy, who's a pastor and he believes in God, knew that I'm completely angry with God. And really, I wanted to come in here just to pretty much tell God off, you know? So I kept wondering to myself, you know, would it really matter or would he still welcome me into Hoboken Grace? So I wasn't sure that I believed in what Chris had to say, but I had never heard any pastor say that up front. So I was curious. So I stayed because I was curious, you know? I remember the worship team sang Came to My Rescue. I'd never heard the song before. The words were, I called, you answered, and you came to my rescue. I couldn't help but wonder and make the connection of those words to my prayer the night before. And certainly, I was very cognizant of my prayer because I never prayed. So the fact that I broke down and prayed that night before, and then the words of those of the song was, came to my rescue, really like struck a chord in me. So I decided, okay, maybe I'll stick around a little longer. However, I was still very doubtful. I decided at the end they made an offer for come meet the pastor. So I decided, well, I'm going to go meet this pastor, and I'm going to tell him all the bad things about me, and I wonder if he's still going to be happy to see me. So I was pretty sure that there would be no place for me at Hoboken Grace after that. So I went and met Chris, and Rachel was there with him. So I met Chris and Rachel at the same time. That meeting, to be honest, is a huge blur to me, other than I recall treating the meeting really like a confessional. So I literally walked in, introduced myself, and I just started talking, started rambling about everything in my life, in confession mode. And Chris just sat and listened, and Rachel just sat and listened, I was completely taken back by how Chris reacted so matter of fact to anything I had to say. Any imperfection I brought up or anything I've done wrong or any, he was just so tranquil and so, okay, that's okay. Oh, well, no, that's, you know, that happens. I was completely taken back by that because, I've never experienced that kind of unconditional listening, and he was really intent. Rachel was preoccupied for me, and it was obvious. As we were walking out of the office, Rachel placed her arm around me and invited me to be a part of her dinner group. And guess what? It's now my dinner group. No longer her dinner group. I love and enjoy the relationships that I've built with the beautiful ladies in my dinner group. They definitely have made me feel connected at a more intimate level. That day was definitely the beginning of something wonderful for me. Here I am, a handful of months later, hasn't been too long, and I'm loving dinner group, I'm loving children's ministry, I'm learning to be free, which is fantastic, and I'm enjoying to you know, just to get to know this big family. Most importantly, though, for me, has been that when I look at myself in the mirror these days, I actually like what I see. So I'm a pretty happy camper at Hope, Hogan Grace, and I love it.
For those of you who don't know me, my name's Chris High. I'm the pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And whether you're here today for the first time or whether you're listening online, we're glad that you're with us. And what Elma shared is true. Today we believe no matter where you are in your journey, that not only is this a place you can call home, but we believe that God is pursuing you. We believe that God wants to know you. We believe that God wants you to know him. And today is a really special day for us because not only are we celebrating one day and all the incredible things that happened yesterday and how we're able to love and serve our community, but today we're also kicking off a brand new series, a brand new conversation called Story. And as I'm on this journey, I don't know if you're like me, but as I'm on this journey of trying to experience God, trying to learn to trust God, trying to engage with this God that I do believe is pursuing me. One of the things that frustrates me over and over and over again, one of the obstacles that I run up against over and over and over again, one of the things that makes this really hard for me is the fact that I can't actually see him. It's the fact that I can't actually touch him. It's the fact that this God that I'm pursuing, I can't actually experience with my physical senses. So I can't smell him, I can't taste him, I can't hear him. And so how then do I know him? And not only do I experience this as I'm trying to experience him, but then I also run up against this. In some ways, it's even worse when I begin to move into the lives of the people around me and I begin to try to communicate to them who he is. And so I'm having conversations with my friends or I'm having conversations with people that God has placed around me, and I'm trying to help them see who God is. But how in the world do you begin to communicate to someone this God that you can't actually touch and see, and then they can't touch and see, that you can't experience physically, and that then in turn they can't experience physically? For me, it's one of the most frustrating things about this journey. And I think for any of us who are on this path of, okay, I'm learning to trust, and again, no matter where you are on your journey, this is part of our experience. Because whether you're trying to trust God that he's real, whether you're trying to trust God or whether you're working through this idea of trusting God that he gave his son for you, that he loves you, that he cares for you, about this man, Jesus Christ, or whether you're trying to trust God that he's going to provide for you, whether you're trying to trust God about the relationship that you're in, no matter where you are in this journey, we're all struggling with this idea of trust. We're all struggling with this idea of actually believing that he is who he says he is, that he's going to do what he says that he's going to do. And for me, a huge part of that struggle is the fact that I can't actually experience him physically? And then even above and beyond that, how do I begin to communicate him to others? The people that I love, the people that I want so badly to be able to find him, to be able to know that he loves them, the way that I'm beginning to experience that for myself. How does that work? What does that look like? And that's what this series is really all about. One, for those of us who are just kind of beginning this journey of learning to trust, how do I begin to know and see this God that I can't touch and see with my eyes? And then continuing from there, how do I begin to bring that God to the world around me? And how in the world do you communicate something like this to others? Now, the good news in this is the fact that we're not alone, right? I mean, from the moment, for everyone who's ever lived, from the moment that Adam and Eve stepped out of the relationship with God, where they actually walked with him on a daily basis, from the moment they stepped out of that relationship, no one alive has ever experienced God physically on a consistent basis. The disciples were the closest one to that. But even in their life, there was a point at which that ended. And so the good news is that we're not alone. I mean, and this has been a struggle, an obstacle, a tension for every single person who's ever lived. And not only are we not alone because of the people who have come before us, but we're also not alone because God actually wants people to know him. I don't know if you realize this. For some of you, you may have walked in here, and there is this idea of God in religion, that God is kind of distant and disengaged, and that he's kind of waiting for you to find him. That's not actually true. There's this idea that God is almost indifferent of whether or not you find him, and he's like, well, you know, if you do, you do. That's great. If you don't, then it's, you know, bad. But that's not actually who God is. As a matter of fact, in 2 Peter 3:9, we see that the Lord isn't really being slow about his promise, as some people think. No, he's being patient for your sake. He does not want anyone to be destroyed, but wants everyone to repent. He wants people to know him. Not only are we not alone in this because of the fact that there are so many who've come before us that live with this tension, but we're also not alone in this because God is in this with you. He wants you to know him. He wants the people around you to know him. Which for me is really, really good news, because that means that I don't have to figure it out. That changes the question entirely for me, because it goes from, okay, how do I do this? How do I figure this out? And it moves from that question to the question of, well, how does God do this? Because he understands you better than me. He understands the people around me better than me. He understands how people work better than me. And so obviously, if he's trying to do this, then I want to join in with him and what he's trying to do and how he's trying to do it. So the question then becomes, well, how then does God communicate who he is to people? How is God engaging with the world around me so that they could actually know him? So that I can begin to not only know him, but to do the same for the people around me. The answer to that question, I believe, is story. Because when you pick up this book, and when you pick up the scriptures, and the truth is that this book was given to you so that you would know God, so that you would understand him, so that you would understand how he thinks and how he works and how he moves in different situations. Now, some of you have been told that this book was given to you so that you would make all the right decisions and do all the right things and follow all the rules. That's not true. This book was given to you so that you would actually know God, so that you would be able to experience him, so that you would begin to grow in understanding him. That's what this is all about. And it's interesting because for most of us, if we were going to write a book about God, we wouldn't write a book that looks anything like this. Our book would be a book that would walk through a set of descriptions. And so we would walk through the different attributes of God and how he works. And it would be very logical. And okay, God is omnipotent, which means all powerful. And God is omniscient, which means all knowing. And we would list all these characteristics of God and all these attributes of God. But that's not actually how God goes about it. Because as God gives you this book and he says, listen, I want you to know me, he doesn't give you a list of attributes. As a matter of fact, omniscient, omnipresent, these are not in this book. He gives you stories. And then on top of that, when God becomes a man and lives and dwells amongst us, lives with people in the man of Jesus Christ, he doesn't go around. You don't see Jesus going around all over the place saying, listen, God is like this, God is this, God is like this, and giving descriptions. That's not how he works. What does he do? Over and over and over again, he moves into the lives of people and he begins to tell stories. Because as God is answering this question of how do you communicate this thing that you can't see, that you can't touch, that you can't taste, that you can't smell, that you can't hear, because as he's answering that question, he answers it with story. And I think there are a lot of different reasons to this. I mean, stories have an incredible power to allow you to be able to share something that can't be sensed, that you can't experience with your physical senses. Stories have the ability to give you the opportunity to put something, to communicate something that you can't possibly put into words. It takes theories and makes them real. And so I can stand up here today and I can tell you that God is all-powerful, that God is omnipotent. And that will mean something to you. Or I can stand up here today and tell you the story of this God who takes this slave nation of Israel out of Egypt, and he doesn't go around the Red Sea with this nation. He goes right through it. And he doesn't say, listen, I want you to build a lot of boats, and I'm going to help you build these boats, and you're going to be able to cross it. He says, no. I'm going to split it in half, and the water is going to stand up as walls on each side of you, and you're not going to walk through it like mucky and muddy. No, I'm actually going to be able to dry the ground under it. You're going to walk through it on dry ground. That's how powerful I am. And all of a sudden, this theory becomes real. And what we couldn't quantify before, we begin to understand through story. And so as you pick up this book over and over and over again, you see him telling stories. You see him stepping into the lives of people just like you and me in order to tell a story. A story that shows the world who he is. And there are a few exceptions to this. But the exceptions to this are always on purpose and for a purpose. In order to illustrate this for you, I want to walk you back to a story that we find in the book of Exodus. It's a story about a man named Moses. And if you don't know the story of Moses, I encourage you, go back and read his story. His story begins at the beginning of this book called Exodus. Go back and read his story. It's phenomenal. What God does in the life of this man is unbelievable. And we don't have a lot of time to kind of walk through the what comes before this point in the story, but when we find Moses, he's actually in the middle of this wilderness, and he's taking care of these sheep. He's a shepherd. And he's kind of running from Egypt. He's not interested in going back to Egypt at all. He's trying to keep his distance. He's kind of a runaway at this point, a fugitive at this point. And so he's in the middle of this wilderness. He's taking care of the sheep. And all of a sudden, something phenomenal happens to him. Something completely out of the norm. I'll pick up the story. It starts in Exodus chapter 3, verse 1. It says this. It says, one day Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. This is amazing, Moses said to himself. Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go see it. Now, this is kind of where the story gets a little weird for me. The things that amaze me about this story, you may just kind of glance right over them, but if I see a bush that isn't burning up, I'm not going to go towards it. Right? I don't think many of us are going to go towards it. But I think Moses is probably at this point in his life just totally bored out of his mind. And he's just out there. It's just him and a bunch of sheep. He's like, what do I have to lose? I mean, it may be that at this point, he's like, maybe the fire will just come out and engulf me. It'll all be over. This is miserable. It's awful. I'm tired of this wilderness. We don't know. But either way, he sees this thing and he says, man, I got to go check that out. So he goes over. It says, when the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush, Moses, Moses. Here I am, Moses replied. Now, I have no idea what's running through Moses' head at this point. I guess just the only possible answer he could come up with is, that's me. I'm here. Who's behind the bush? And so he says, here I am. Do not come any closer, the Lord warned. Something that would not have been necessary to tell me, especially when the bush starts talking. Right, the fact that it's on fire is one thing. When it starts talking to me, I'm backing away. I'm not moving forward. Do not come any closer, the Lord warned. Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. Now you need to understand something about this. Moses understood that because of his brokenness, that if he was to see God, if he was to come physically in contact with God, that he would die. And so that's why you see Moses do this, and he covers his face because, like, I can't see you. If I see you, I know I'm going to die. And at this point, he's pretty much terrified. Then the Lord told him, I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their cries of distress because they're harsh slave drivers. At this point, the nation of Israel was in slavery in Egypt. Yes, I am aware of their suffering, so I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, the land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live. That's twice. I made it through that list twice. Both services today without failing. That's right. Yes, absolutely. Then I lost my place. Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Israelites or the Egyptians abused them. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people Israel out of Egypt. But Moses protested to God, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt? Again, this is very different between me and Moses. If a bush is talking to me, I'm not going to argue with it. Right? You're like, dude, the bush is on fire and it's not burning up. Shut up and do what it says. God answered, I will be with you, and this is your sign that I am the one who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain. And he says, listen, this is the sign that you're going to know that it's me because I'm bringing you back here. But Moses protested, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, what is his name? What should I tell them? God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel. Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my eternal name and my name to remember for all generations. And as the story continues, Moses continues to be a little bit off his rocker, and he continues to argue with God. But eventually, Moses gets to the point where he says, okay, God, I'm going to trust you. And as you read through the story over the next couple chapters and throughout the course of that book, God uses Moses to do some unbelievable things. and the nation of Israel is led from slavery to freedom. And God uses him to not only change the lives of the people who live there then, but to really, in many ways, change your lives. Because there's not one person alive today that's not different because of this story, that hasn't been impacted because of this story. Throughout history, there are huge shifts that happen because of the fact that this story takes place. And this is an exception. Because Moses actually experiences God with his physical senses. Moses stands before this bush and he's seeing this power of God and he hears God actually audibly talk to him. For some of you, this is going to be true for you. For some of you, you're going to, in some way, shape, or form, actually experience God with your senses. Last week, as we listened to the stories of how God has been working in people's lives, Jill shared the fact that she had actually audibly heard God. Now, I can tell you, that's never happened for me. I've experienced God speaking to me in my heart, but I have never, ever audibly heard God talk to me. But for some of you, God is going to actually physically, you're going to actually physically experience him. Not many of you. I can say that with all sorts of confidence because when you pick up this book, you find that the people that experience God physically are very rare. It doesn't happen often. Outside of the people who experience God in Jesus Christ and experience him physically in that way, the number of people who experience God with their physical senses is extremely limited. But for some of you, that may be your reality. For most of you, however, you're going to experience God the way that the rest of the nation of Israel experiences God in this story. Because as this story plays out, Moses goes back and he walks into Pharaoh's palace and he says, listen, I want you, you know how you have this entire nation of people serving you? You know how they're making you rich? I want you to let them go. That's not the easiest message to deliver. Right? I don't think there's any situation where that's received well. But he does. As a matter of fact, there's this whole process that he walks through of over and over again going to Pharaoh. And as the nation of Israel watches this, as the Jews watch this play out before them, they're not expecting him to ever come back. There's not a high chance that he's going to come out of that meeting alive. But yet he does. And as he comes, I can only imagine what it was like when he arrived back and he had kind of grown up inside of this community, inside of this slave community. I can't imagine what it was like when he comes back and he's like, yeah, I'm going to free you guys. And they're like, dude, you've been in the wilderness for a long time. That sun did something to your head. But as they watch him, over and over again, they see him take these steps of faith. And they see this story play out right in front of him, where this guy continues to take these steps of faith, to trust God that God is going to do what he said he's going to do, to trust God that he's going to protect him, that he's going to provide for him. And as they watch this story play out in front of them, all of a sudden, this group of people begins to trust God themselves. And for most of you, that's how you're going to experience God. Because you're going, as we have for the last couple weeks, you're going to see God work in the life of this person, and this person, and this person and this person. And then all of a sudden, you're going to begin to decide, you know what, I think, based on what I see, I can trust him too. And then you're going to take a step of faith, and you're going to see him work. Then you're going to take another step of faith, and you're going to see him work. And then all of a sudden, someone else is going to be watching your story, and they're going to know and experience God through your story. You see, a few of you are going to be in the position of Moses, where something is going to happen. But Moses' story is something that happened on purpose, for a purpose. And God purposefully steps into Moses' life. It had nothing to do with his faith. It had nothing to do with the step of faith that he had taken. God just steps into his life out of nowhere and says, listen, I'm going to begin telling my story. And it's going to be through you. And Moses decides to follow. And because of that, all of a sudden, there are all these stories that begin to be put into action. And all of a sudden, this nation of Israel sees who God actually is. And all of a sudden, now beyond that, as God leads them out of Egypt, out of slavery, now all of a sudden, this entire region sees who God is. As this story is told over and over and over again. Because you see, God believes that the way people will know who he is through the stories of those who follow him. The stories of those who experience him. And so over and over again, throughout this book, you see him stepping into the lives of individuals just like you and just like me to tell his story. And if we're going to begin to move into the lives of our coworkers, if we're going to begin to move into the lives of our friends, if we're going to begin to move into the lives of those that we care about, and we're going to show them who God is, it's not going to be because we finally put together the perfect list of attributes and characteristics and theories that we're going to be able to share with them. No. It's about telling your story. Which is why when Jesus Christ is leaving his followers in Acts 1:8, he says this. He says, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, and you will be my witnesses, telling people about me everywhere. He says, listen, guys, I'm going away, but you're going to be my storytellers. And through you, the entire world is going to know who I am. It's the way that he left us, and it's the way that it is today. But if this is going to happen, there are a couple different traps that we're going to have to avoid. There are a couple different traps that we're going to have to make sure that we don't fall into. The first of those traps is the fact that sometimes in our lives, God is stepping into our lives, stepping into your life, and he's showing you exactly what he wants you to do. Maybe it's through the story of someone else. Maybe it's through something that you read in his word. Maybe it's through something that you, a story that you hear inside of your dinner group. I don't know where it is, but he's going to step into your life and he's going to say, listen, I want you to take this step of faith. I want you to do this thing that you think maybe is crazy. And you're going to hear it and you're going to understand it. But nothing's going to happen. And so maybe even you walk out of here on Sunday morning and you're like super excited. You're like, man, I experienced God today. I know exactly what he's leading me to. I know exactly what he wants me to do, but you're not going to do it. And you're going to be in Moses' situation, and this story is just about to start. But the truth is, if Moses hadn't acted, there would be no story. And for some of you, you're in a place, and God has told you exactly what he wants you to do. And he's leading you to take a step of faith. But you're not acting, and so there's no story. And you know what the lie is? The lie is, man, if I had the burning bush, then I'd be good to go. You know, like if I walked outside of my apartment and the bush, on the side of my doorway was on fire and someone started talking to me from that burning bush, I would absolutely believe it. I would absolutely follow God. You know, God, if you would just give me this sign, I would be good to go. God, if you would just do this in my life, then I would trust you. God, if you would just work this miracle in my life, then I would follow you. The lie is that if I had the burning bush every single day, or if I had the burning bush more consistently, then I would follow, then I would trust him. It's completely false. Moses didn't even trust him when he was standing right in front of it, and you wouldn't either. Because you don't learn to trust God by standing in front of a burning bush. You learn to trust God as you see God take care of the people around you. You learn to trust God as you see how God takes care of the people in this book. You see, the idea that you're going to trust God to lead you out of an eating disorder because you stand in front of a burning bush is ridiculous. You don't learn to trust God that he can do that in your life because of a miracle. You learn to trust God that he can do that in your life when you hear the story of how he did it for someone else. You don't trust God that he's going to provide for you at work when you stand up for what is right because of the fact that you have a burning bush outside your building. You trust God that he's going to provide for you at your job when you stand up for what is right, when you hear the story of someone who stood up for what was right and God took care of them. You don't trust God that he loves you enough for you to be able to walk away from that destructive relationship until you hear the story of someone who walked away from a destructive relationship and still felt loved. And so in your life, there aren't going to be a lot of burning bushes. But there are a ton of stories. But in order for those stories to happen, when God comes to you as he came to Moses, as he came to the nation of Israel through Moses, and says, listen, I want you to act, you have to trust. You have to act. And for some of you, there is no story. Because even though you've seen it in the lives of other people, you're still not trusting him. You're still not following. For others of you, you're interacting with the stories from last week, you're interacting with the stories that we've heard throughout this year, and all of a sudden God has come to you and said, listen, I want you to take this step. I want you to put this into practice. I want you to take this step of faith. I know it doesn't make any sense to you, but I want you to do it, and you've taken that step of faith. And you're experiencing God in incredible ways. I mean, this church is full of stories of people who were in relationships that they thought they could never, ever leave behind, but they have, and they still feel full, and they still feel loved because they're experiencing this with God. This church has stories of people who have overcome drug addictions, like literally in months, because of the fact that God is meeting those needs that they kept seeking in all these other places. Stories of people who've walked away from pornography. Stories of people who've experienced victory and all these crazy things. And I get to know most of these stories. But some of these stories I don't know either. Because you're not telling your story. And so in your life, someone decided to act in faith. And it impacted someone else who decided to act in faith. and you heard their story, and you decided to act in faith. And so there's this little domino effect. But the problem is, it ended with you. Because you're not telling your story. The first trap is that we don't act. The second trap is that we don't tell our story. That we're not witnesses. But what God wants to do in your life, and God's plan for this community, God's plan for this church, God's plan for the people who live next to you, God's plan for the people that you work with, God's plan for your family, God's plan for your friends, God's plan for your dinner group, God's plan for all those people that you so much want to be able to know and experience God, is this idea that one story would impact another story, and another story, and another story, and another story. And all of a sudden, there would be this body of people who are witnesses to who God actually is. And Hoboken and your building and your family will know this thing that they can't touch or see or taste or hear because of the stories. But if that's going to be happen, you have to be committed to two things. Over the next 5 weeks, we're going to be working through this, and we're working through how do we become expert storytellers? How do we become experts at being witnesses? How do we become experts at trusting in something we can't touch and taste and feel? And for those of you who are just beginning this journey, you walked in here today, you're like, I don't even know if God is real. This is going to be all about how you can begin to look at stories and interact with stories and see God in these situations and in these places. And for others of you, this is going to be about how you take what you're experiencing with God and how you begin to communicate that to others. We're going to begin working through how do I become an expert storyteller. But if that's going to happen, you have to be committed to two things. Because number one, throughout this next few weeks, God's going to ask you to do something that doesn't make sense to you. And that may be as simple as joining a dinner group. That may be as simple as just getting plugged into a ministry team. I don't know what it's going to be for you. That may be as big as standing up for something at work. But over the next few weeks, God's going to ask you to take a step of faith. And if you're not committed to acting, you're not going to be a part of this storytelling. You have to be willing and committed to act. And then number two, you have to be committed to sharing your story. To saying, you know what, this isn't about me. And in Moses' life, God didn't do what he did just for Moses. He did it because he was changing history. And you don't know if he doesn't want to do the exact same thing through your story. And so you have to be willing to act, and you have to be willing to tell your story. Will you pray with me? Father, as we walk through this today and we look at how you're telling the story of who you are, we look at how you're using the lives of these people that we see in the scriptures to be able to communicate who you are and how you work, and you're displaying yourself all over the place through these stories. Father, we want to be a part of that. Father, I want to pray for those who are here today who may be walking away from you or want nothing to do with you, and they're not even sure why they're here right now. Father, I pray that they would hear Elma's story and realize that you want to know them. And Father, I pray for those who are here and they know that you're leading them to this step of faith, but they haven't acted. Father, I pray that they would embrace the story you're trying to tell through them, that they would move into this, and although it's uncertain and unknown, that they would move into this with arms wide open and excited, because they know that you're telling the story through them. And may our world know who you are because of the stories you tell through us. You're an incredible God. In Jesus' name.